Good morning. We are coming up on our annual Bible Forum, so that's not this Thursday, but it's a week from Thursday. That'll be Thursday night, Friday night, Saturday morning, and then Sunday. Don Bunting, good man, works up in Manhattan, will be here with us, and he's going to be doing an overview of the Bible. And if you or a friend of yours or somebody you know has had trouble sometimes with, you know, this Bible event, you know, that Bible event, you know, there was this king, you know, there was that judgment, but you don't know how it fits together, this will be an excellent, excellent series. Be here, even if you know those things, but if you don't know those things, it'll help put things together because it's going to be an overview of the Bible. You'll enjoy Don being here. Looking forward to him coming and doing that with us. And we've got some both large and smaller flyers. There's some out here. Take those, be inviting people. Use social media, let your friends know. And as you're talking to your friends about coming, you might find some of them that want to know, why should I be interested in the Bible? Because what a lot of people think the Bible is, they just think it's some old Hebrew mythology. And it was written thousands of years ago. And we're modern people. So why should we be interested in that book? Why do you believe that? And so look at 1 Peter chapter 3. 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 15. There's a verse that touches on this. 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 15. Sanctify in your hearts Christ as Lord, being ready always to give answer to every man that asks you a reason concerning the hope that lies within you. Be ready to give an answer. If somebody asks you, why do you have a hope in God? Be ready to give an answer. What would that answer be? Now, there's all sorts of different questions and can be different answer different ways. If why do you believe that Jesus is Messiah? You can go and you can look at the prophecies written hundreds of years before he ever lived and see their fulfillment. You can look at the evidence of the resurrection. You can look at the testimony of the Apostle Paul and different things like that, who hated Christianity and then the Lord appeared to him and he switched, different things like that. But I want to start this morning fundamentally with just why even believe that there is a creator at all. Has anybody here ever seen God? Ever touched God? So what reason do you have for believing that a God exists? And that's what we're going to be looking at this morning. I need to pull this up here. Just give me one moment. That's not it. This is a switch topic morning, so that's why I didn't have the right one up here. There we go. All right. So, First Peter 3:15. Always be prepared to make a defense to anyone that asks you a reason concerning the hope that is in you, yet do it with gentleness and respect. We're going to look at three simple and self-evident facts. We're going to skip the part basically about principles of faith and evidence and move on to this. Specific revelation of God's word and his son is found in Scripture, but the general revelation of God's power you can see without a Bible. This is what Romans 1 says. Because the Gentiles, not the Jewish people, but the Gentiles, who didn't have the Hebrew scriptures, Romans 1 said that they could have seen there was a creator by looking at what? By looking at what was made. And that's what we'll be doing this morning. We'll be looking about what was made. Psalms 19 mentions this same principle. It says, the heavens declare the glory of God, and the firmament shows his handiwork. Psalm 8, O Lord, our Lord, how majestic is your name in all the earth, who have displayed your splendor above the heavens. When I consider your heavens, the work of your fingers, the moon and the stars, which you have ordained, What is man that you are mindful of him? That's the sun, which is a pretty magnificent thing. That's the earth to scale to the sun. And you and I are little bitty things on that little bitty thing, going around that one star in this huge, huge universe. I praise you, for I'm fearfully and wonderfully made. As tiny and insignificant as you look in the entire universe compared to the size of everything, there's so much that God put into you. Just the healing system that's in you, the immune system that's in you, the respiratory system that's in you, all the circulatory system that's in you, all these things going on that show design. Talk about those that go down to the seas, they see the works of the Lord and his wonders in the deep. Can you lift up your voice to the clouds and bring the rain? Can you send forth the lightnings? Can you hunt down the prey for the lion? Do you give the horse his might? Nature is just magnificently powerful. And Romans 1 says, since the creation of the world, his invincible attributes, his eternal power and divine nature have been clearly seen, being understood through what is made. So I want to make clear what we're talking about and not talking about this morning. We're not talking about that looking at creation, you can see Jesus rose from the dead. Not by looking at creation, you can see that the Hebrew prophets had a different message than the pagan idolaters around them. Those would be different lessons. We're talking about just looking at creation, and this is what we can do with people that we meet and talk to. And there's two different belief systems. There might be some other things, but these are two common belief systems that dominate today. And one says something went bang, and it ended up with some chemicals that ended up eventually with this universe, that eventually ended up with these planets and this solar system, and eventually on this earth, some chemicals eventually turned into kind of a primordial organic soup, and life came from non-life. And then that life kept reproducing and changing into invertebrates, fish, reptiles, mammals, apes, and here we are now. Now, another belief says, no, we evidence intentional design, not just explosive accidents, and there's a creator. But let me tell you something. Nobody saw the view on the lower part happen. Nobody saw the view on the upper part happen. Whatever happened was amazing. It's not happening all the time. Life on this planet began at some point, and it's something that is not what's going on every day today. And nobody saw it. So how can we have an idea about what happened since we weren't there to see it happen? Well, if you are called to a jury and you've got to have the evidence of a crime presented to you, can you go back in time and watch the criminal commit the crime to know that he's guilty? If there's a videotape, maybe, but you're not going to be able to go back in time. And if there's not videotape, you're not going to be able to see it. So how do crimes ever, ever, ever get solved? You know what they do? They present the evidence that remains. And so they show you the fibers, you know, they show you the DNA, they show you the bloody knife, they show you the email that he wrote that said, I'm going to kill you, things like that. And the stuff that's left behind allows you to come to a conclusion. So we're going to look at what's here now. And here are the three things I want to emphasize this morning. We exist, we're alive, and we exhibit design. This is not complex. It's very, very simple. Do we exist? Most people are going to agree to that. Every once in a while, you'll run into maybe somebody that's stubborn, and they say, well, I don't know if we exist or not. You know, maybe we're our imagination. Most people have enough common sense to know we do exist, and we are alive. And when you look at it, we exhibit design. So, let's look at each of these points. Nothing comes from nothing. Life comes from life. Design comes from a designer. If we exist, we didn't come from nothing. If we're alive, we're going to talk about the principle that life comes from life. And if we show design, that points to a design. Let's start with nothing comes from nothing. I want you to imagine nothing. So everybody around you just doesn't exist. The chairs don't exist. This building doesn't exist. Pennsylvania doesn't exist. The solar system doesn't exist. That big star, the sun, doesn't exist. Nothing in the universe exists. Just nothing. There's no energy. There's no electron. There's no neutron. There's no proton. There's no molecule. There's no atom. There's absolutely nothing. Five minutes later, and you couldn't measure time because time measures things against things, so you wouldn't have time. But I want you to imagine, just for exercise sake, if ever, ever, ever there had been absolutely nothing, what would there have been 5 minutes later? Nothing. But what if you waited 100 years? Well, but what if you waited 1,000,000 years? What if you waited 1,000,000,000 years? You see, the problem is not how long you wait. The problem is that if you've got absolutely nothing, you've got absolutely no cause to have an effect. Science deals with cause and effect. So, this is Science Questions. The Big Bang Theory, what went bang? This is some scientists from England. And they say, answer, that's a very good question. The answer, strangely enough, is nothing. The Big Bang sprang out of nothing. Stephen Hawking, the very famous scientist, atheistic scientist, a few years ago, God did not create the universe. The universe can create itself from nothing, says Professor Hawkins. Because there is a law such as gravity, the universe can and will create itself from nothing. Spontaneous creation is the reason why there is something rather than nothing, why the universe exists, why we exist. Edward P. Tyrone but said back in 1973, this is cited by Morris in a book, The Words Against Him, I propose that our universe had been created spontaneously from nothing. Sometimes they explain it mathematically like this. Is this a true mathematical equation? Let's do from this side. What's 1 plus negative 1? 1 plus negative 1 is what? Nothing. So, what's nothing? Nothing could be a combination of plus 1 and negative 1. And so they've suggested that you have nothing, but every once in a while, nothing divides up into a positive and a negative. And we're in that little blip. You can look online and see people who've made this argument and stuff. I just want to point out the logicalness of this. Yeah, if you have something and you take it away, that's nothing. That doesn't mean where there's absolutely nothing, you can say, oh, there's a positive and a negative. It's like this. If you got a man with $0 and you give him $1,000,000, does he have nothing? No, he's got $1,000,000. He goes to Las Vegas, he blows it all, and now he has $0, right? Everybody agrees to that, right? That math works. How much money does that pufferfish have? Franz, you've caught pufferfish. I've been out there with you when you caught pufferfish. Did you check his pockets? He had nothing. Does that mean that that fish used to be a millionaire and then lost it? No, sometimes nothing is just nothing. Yes, if you have something taken away, you're back to nothing, but that doesn't mean you can make something out of nothing. In this case, that the money that fish has is nothing plus nothing equals nothing. Nothing comes from nothing. If there was never nothing, then there was always something. Think about that for a minute. If ever there had been absolutely nothing, what would there be today? Nothing. The fact that something exists today, the fact that LaDonna's glasses exist today, means there could have never been nothing. or that wouldn't be here today. If there was never nothing, then there was always something. Now, maybe somebody wants to say, maybe something was energy. Maybe something was a rock. Well, at least you've got something. But let's move forward. Life comes from life. Spontaneous generation. I've got a book back there. It belonged to April when she was in elementary school. And you open it up, and it talked about Dr. Francisco Redi, who proved that life doesn't just spontaneously generate. He's an Italian scientist a few hundred years ago. Because at that time, some people in Europe thought that frogs came from mud and mice came from wheat. I imagine some people in Europe, farmers and stuff, that understood biology well enough with breeding on the farm, figured that that's not where frogs and mice came from. But some people thought that. Well, he didn't experiment to show because people thought maggots came from meat. So he did a real simple experiment. He took some meat and he covered it. He took some meat and he left it uncovered where flies could land on it. Guess what happened to the uncovered meat? Maggots. Oh, it came from the meat. No, because guess what happened to the covered meat? No maggots. It didn't come from the meat. It was planted in the meat, but it didn't come from there. Where did that life come from? It came from life. And so it says in her science book, so this showed that spontaneous generation is not true. Life comes from life. Very next page, it says, so how did life get here to begin with? And it says, scientists think maybe laws were different back then. And basically life came from non-life. Really? The cell, I've got another book back there that says the cell is a really, it describes the cell, and it says most people think of the cell as being a very, very complicated thing.
Yes.
And it says, but really a cell is made up of about six basic things. And it mentions water, carbon, and a few other things, and proteins. Then it admits that proteins are very, very, very complicated. Of course they are. We're not going to get into that. But do you see the impression that that creates when you said, turns out a cell is just made up of these basic ingredients? It kind of gives you the idea if you kind of stirred those ingredients around long enough, you might get a what? Yeah. You know, what's an omelet? It's got some eggs, it's got some bacon, it's got some cheese, it's got some onions. If you put all that together and stir it around, what do you get? You get an omelet. And so if you get some carbons and some, you know, that type of thing. Well, again, they admit the protein is really, really, really complicated. But the thing is, it's not just about the ingredients. So, for instance, this laptop right here, Mac laptop. Where did the ingredients for this laptop come from? How much of it was imported from a different universe? None. All the ingredients of this laptop came from where? Planet Earth. 100% of the ingredients came from planet Earth. There's probably some copper in there, some aluminum in there, you know, some various other things. Do you think if you just went down to the beach and poured some of those minerals in there and stirred that for a while, it would produce this? What if you had a million people stirring, you know, just get some minerals in the mud and everybody stir, a million people for a million years? How long would it take to come up with one of these? A billion people. That won't produce it. Why? A designed object, it's not just the list of ingredients, it's the intelligent arrangement of them. For instance, if you run over my laptop with a steamroller, all the ingredients are still there. but it's not a computer anymore. And we can do that with this guy. We can take a squirrel and offer him to the scientists and say, here's life. And put squirrel in there. You now have 100% of a squirrel. All the ingredients of a squirrel are right there. And you can pour it out. Can he remake that squirrel?
But all the ingredients are there.
It's not, design isn't just the list of ingredients. It's about the arrangement. Intelligent design comes from an intelligent designer. This, and some of you have heard this lesson before, but if you haven't, what is that? You first say, well, it's a hummingbird, but did you realize it's not a natural hummingbird? This was the invention of the year or something, at least made the cover of Time magazine a few years ago, and it's a nano hummingbird. It's a drone, and it's got a little camera on it. And so you can imagine different things that could be used for in fighting terrorism or different things. But it's pretty amazing. It can fly up to 11 miles per hour. It can fly for 5 minutes. And it can hover, fly, do all that type of thing. Now, if I ask my atheistic friend and I say, do you believe that's a planned combination of parts showing evidence of a designer or an unplanned combination of parts showing no evidence of a designer? What would an unbeliever say? A person who doesn't believe in God, they would say what? That can't be an unplanned combination of parts. There's too much intelligent design in it, so it has to be what? A planned arrangement. And then if I ask my unbeliever friend, who do you suppose planned it and arranged it? He would say, well, it must have been some Homo sapien did it. I say, I think you're right. And then I ask, does the Homo sapien show planned combination of parts showing evidence of a designer or unplanned combination of parts showing no evidence of a designer? And my atheistic friend will say, well, that's an unplanned. Oh, okay. So if this guy came from this, but he can produce that, then guess where your hummingbird drone ultimately came from? It came from there. But you know what? We can do a whole lot better than a hummingbird drone. A real hummingbird is just amazing. They can fly nonstop for 500 miles. We know that because they migrate across the Gulf of Mexico. A hummingbird weighs the amount of a penny, and it can fly 500 miles nonstop. And we're gone. A hummingbird egg will be born in a nest built by its parents, and then it will later know how to build a nest. How does he know that? He wasn't there helping him build it. He's not even laid yet. How does a hummingbird do all this? Now, the question I'm about to pose is pretty simple. Which hummingbird shows higher technology, more design, more sophistication, more advancement? The little mechanical hummingbird that can fly for, what was it, 11 minutes or 5 minutes or something? 5 minutes? Or this one? Peregrine falcon can dive going up to almost 200 miles per hour. Peacock can fly. Eagle can weigh up to 13 pounds. And look at your finger. This is one of the simplest things about the human body. It's one of my favorite things, but it's one of the simplest things of all. And there's the stuff that goes on inside your body right now that you're not having to control, just all the chemicals and systems that are handling things you don't even know about. It's amazing. But you can see this, so we're just going to use this. Why do you have fingerprints? And people, when I ask that question, they usually say, so the police can identify you. But fingerprint technology didn't come around till later, you know. But all your ancestors used their fingerprints even before that technology came along. If you put your fingers side by side and rub them, go ahead and do this if you haven't done this. Put your finger side by side and rub it. It just slides easily. Now put your finger face to face and rub. Feel that? That's grip. This is tread. It's why you have tread on the bottom of your shoes, if you have smart shoes. You know, I hate the kind of shoes that don't have any tread on the bottom. You know, it's winter, it's icy, you put on dress shoes with no tread. You know, we put tread there for a reason. Where's the tread on your car? Exactly at the spot where it meets the road. Exactly right there. There's no tread on your roof. There's not tread on the middle of the wheel. It's right where it needs to be. Where's your tread? Right there and on the bottom of your foot.
If it wasn't, you would be falling down in the shower.
That's just one tiny, tiny, tiny example of design. I want to give two more illustrations, and pardon me for those of you who have heard this before, that I didn't have fresh illustrations for you today, but it was a changed topic. We're all going through the woods, and we come to a meadow, and lo and behold, that's in the meadow. And Jim says, "How'd that get here?" And I go, "Well, I think that's composed of things that came from the planet Earth." And Jim says, "Well, I suppose so, but how did it get here?" I said, "Well, obviously by natural processes. There's steel there. We know there's iron ore in the Earth, and over billions of years, that iron ore probably had come to the surface through tectonic plate pressure, and through maybe a lightning storm or something, maybe some of that was forged into steel. And then, during the glacier periods and during all sorts of windstorms, it was shaped into an aerodynamic shape. And prior to the glacial period, maybe this was a more temperate zone or tropical zone, and there were rubber trees there. And there was a rubber tree here, 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 here. And then maybe there was a forest fire, and it vulcanized that rubber, and a windstorm that inflamed each of those pools to 45 psi. And then, during the Ice Age, some animals hibernated on the inside and left their skins. So all the ingredients, and we could go on, come from this earth. Would anybody agree with me that that just happened? And Jim says, "I don't believe that at all." I said, "Well, then what's your theory?" And Jim says, "I think Porsche engineers made it." Have you ever seen a Porsche engineer? Have you ever touched a Porsche engineer? How do you know Porsche engineers exist? Because you've seen a Porsche. That's how. Now, you've seen other engineers, to be sure, and so our second illustration will take that into consideration. But let's just take this for a moment. Which shows more design, a Porsche or your body? Now, somebody might say, "Well, that's a lot more sophisticated. It can do 0 to 60 in 4.5 seconds or something like that, and I can't do that." Well, that's true. You cannot run that fast. But if you come to a stone wall, you can climb over it. If you come to a creek, you can swim across it. It can't. It can do one thing really well on pavement. That's about it. And you have the ability to imagine, design, and build as a Homo sapien, something that can get you from point A to point B quicker on asphalt. That car can never create a human being, but a human being can create that car. Now, there's some similarities. It's got a chassis. You've got a skeleton. It's got some pumps. You've got a pump. It has air intake. You've got air intake. It burns fuel. You burn fuel. It's got some computers. You've got a brain. But you are much more sophisticated, and you can reproduce, and you can heal. Imagine being a Porsche engineer, and you're told, "We want you to come up with next year's model, have a male Porsche and a female Porsche, customers can buy both, and start raising Porsches." You're not going to be able to do that. "We want you to design the Porsche so that when it gets in a wreck, it will start healing itself and repainting itself." How are you going to do that? That's going to be pretty tough. Your body does things like that all the time. But like I said, somebody said, "Okay, but we know that human engineers exist. We have seen them." Okay, so last illustration. We get computers smarter and smarter and smarter, and we put them on satellites, and we send them out into outer space. And they've been gone from Earth for a long time. For hundreds and hundreds of years. And they're out there and they've got solar panels, so they're soaking up the sun. They don't have to come back to Earth. And then one day, one of them says to the other one, "I don't think man exists." And the other one says, "What do you mean?" Search your bits and everything. Is there a man in there? No. But we have records that we were created by human beings. Yeah, I know we've got old records that say we're created by human beings, but have you ever seen a human being? I haven't. Have you ever touched one? Have you? So they start having this debate over whether or not human beings exist. And so some of them have just declared the idea of humankind is dead. They never existed. So one of them says, then how do you explain we got here? And he said, well, there were some simpler satellites and some simpler computers. And before that, you had a Texas Instrument calculator. And before that, you had an abacus. And before that, you had some round rocks on a beach somebody was counting with. And that's how we got here. If all these satellites determined, yeah, that makes sense. Because we can't find humankind within our circuits. So that must be right. Would that be advanced thinking or ignorant thinking? If we send those things out there, they show a lot of design, which should kind of indicate what? If those things came from another planet here, how many of us would say, oh, look what strange natural formations came from another planet? No, we would assume it meant what? That there was intelligent life elsewhere. Well, again, we come back to what's here. Do you exist? Yes. Are you alive? Yes. Is your body built in with incredible design? Yes. What does that point to? If we exist, something must have always existed. And if life comes from life, we need to look for a source of life, not something dead. And if we show intelligent design, doesn't that point to an intelligent designer? Now, does that mean that the Hebrew prophets spoke from God? Not necessarily. Does that prove that Jesus rose from the dead? No. But this is step one. And when your friend asks you, what reason do you have for believing that there's a God you've never seen? Remember those three points. We do exist. We are alive, and we exhibit design. Because nothing comes from nothing. So the fact that we exist proves there's something. Life doesn't come from non-life. So we need to look for something alive. And intelligent design comes from a designer. So we want to look for the will of that designer. Thank you for your attention this morning. If you need to respond to the gospel invitation through Jesus Christ, you can do that as we stand and sing.